Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of A Place in the Conversation. My name is Dan Neiswanger, and I'm here with my partner, Nick Everhart. And today, we are making a space for a very special conversation, a conversation about perspectives, a conversation that I'm very glad to have my wife, Nancy, and my daughter, Ringanne, join us as guests. And Nick is here with us as well. And Nancy, Ringanne, why don't you introduce yourselves?
So I am Nancy. I've been married to Dan for almost 33 years. I work in the field of early childhood education. And we have two children, one which is going to introduce herself.
Hi, I'm Ringanne. I'm Dan and Nancy's daughter.
And Ram, what are you doing right now?
I am currently the assistant director at JAM Christian Daycare.
And just for full disclosure, Ram is also plotting her escape from the United States of America. She's looking for any opportunity to live abroad and to get back out of this country. Not because of anything I've done, but just because it's what she wants to do. Today's conversation is about perspectives, and we're going to share a little bit of our story, a very personal journey, personal story about how you can be very, very close together. You can be navigating a season of disruption, or really any part of life, and be navigating it very closely, and yet you can have very, very different perspectives about what is taking place and what is happening. And I'm just thankful that Nancy and Ryan are willing to be here and to share this, because I think it's extremely important. So by way of setting this up for our conversation today, in May of 2016, I was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. And the first time that I met my oncologist, he came into, excuse me, he came into my hospital room, and he shared the diagnosis. And I'm somebody who I want numbers. I need to know what the prognosis is. I need to know what the outlook is, because I want to have an action plan. I want to know how to fight. I want to know how to move forward. And I can't do that without the information. And so in our conversation with Dr. Sroha, I started pushing. And I said, well, what does this mean? And what does this mean long term? What does this mean for my life? And he didn't want to answer that question at first. And I kept pushing. And he finally answered the question, and he stood in front of the little whiteboard that's at the foot of my hospital bed, and he drew a bell curve. And he said, you're here on the left side of the bell curve. The far side is 2 years. And he goes, the most that you can hope for is 2 years. And the odds of you dying in the first year are extremely high. The odds of you making it to 2 years are extremely low. But that's the best that you can hope for. And he was sharing wisdom based upon his experience, based upon the diagnosis that I had. And in that moment in time, something clicked in my brain. And all of a sudden, I'm starting to wrestle with issues of my own mortality in a way that I had never, ever done it before. The second thing that starts going on inside of my brain and what I'm thinking about is I'm looking at Nancy, and I'm thinking, well, what are the things that I have to do between now and 2 years? Or a year, whatever the time is, what are the things that I need to do to set her up so that she can live well? What are the things that I need to take care of so that she can do well when I'm no longer here? And then the third thing that's popped into my mind is, okay, you're the pastor of a church. What are the things that you need to take care of for the church in whatever this period of time is so that the church can do well after you're gone? And that was my perspective. I was wrestling with those three things. I was wrestling with my own mortality. I was wrestling with how do I set those people that I love and I care deeply for, how do I set them up to live life well after I'm gone? And how do I set the congregation that I serve up to do well and to thrive after what is going to be a traumatic thing? So that was my perspective. And Nancy was sitting probably less than 4 feet away from me, and her perspective was totally different. Nancy, what was your perspective?
I think everything changed very quickly, and I'm going to lose Nick. I'm going to cry first, but we knew, we had hints of what was coming because you were placed on the oncology floor. You had a biopsy of your liver. So I had stopped at a friend's house the night before to start talking out loud that, you know, it looks like we're heading towards cancer. And, but still, that diagnosis was a big shock. And, you know, watching a tear go down his face, everything changed. By the time I got in the car and I was driving home, because I was the one that had to call everybody and tell everybody, I think before I made the 45-minute drive home, Dan had already gone into Dan mode. And he had already gone through some of those stages of grieving, and he already had a plan, and he knew who he had to call, and I had not had the time to get there yet. And that was not unusual in our marriage for us to process things in different ways and in different times. But everything, it was just a momentous time. Everything changed. I had to call your parents. Your dad showed a lot of emotion that I had never seen before. I did not call my parents. I called my brother because I couldn't face calling them. And so my brother called everybody in my family and told them to call me the next day. And I think talking about perspectives, I've always been grateful that they accepted that and nobody was offended that they didn't get a personal phone call from one of us. You know, my parents didn't get offended that we didn't, you know, call them first. But everybody allowed us to do what we needed to do those first few days. You know, as we had to tell our children and your parents and everybody else. But I think for me, the difference in perspective was just that we both reacted the same way at first, but then you started formulating that plan and you started moving on and started looking at the bigger picture when I was just still scrambling around to try to catch up.
Yeah. And I think that, like, that's part of why I think this, like, a conversation like this is important, because we were 4 feet away from each other. We both heard the same news at the same moment in time, but our perspectives were so different. You know, as I was wrestling with my mortality and my death, you know, you were wrestling with, wow, at the age of 48, I might have to live the rest of my life without my husband. And I was blind to that, right? I just, you know, there's no way around, like, I can't sugarcoat that. I was blind to that. Because I got myself in this, okay, now I need to get, what do I need to do? What do I need to accomplish? What are we going to do? And it took me a long time to understand that, to understand the different perspectives.
I think one of the immediate things was one of the things you were concerned about right away is that there was an upcoming wedding, and you started texting people that you were going to make it to that wedding. And I didn't care about that wedding. Not that I didn't care about those people, and I would have, you know, but that was not my priority. And there was a lot of other things I was worried about other than the church and a wedding and the job. And that was not the first time that we had ever been out of sync with that. But, you know, that was one of those things where I had the family as the priority and the kids and everybody else, and not some of the other big picture things that you were spending your time worrying about.
And so I want to, one of the reasons we're having this conversation is because we all find ourselves in situations where we look at the world through, excuse me, our own eyes and our own experience. And we miss the perspectives of other people, and some of the people that we care the most about, some of the people that we love the most, some of the people that we want to take care of the most, and even with the best of intentions, like, we miss some things. And just recently, we published a book called Caring Conversations, which kind of helps people think through some of the difficult conversations that you have in the midst of life's disruptions. And all of our lives experience disruptions. And as part of writing that book, I asked Rayanne to write a chapter. And I asked her to write a chapter about what it was like for her at 16 to be... like what her perspective was, but what was her perspective as a 16-year-old when, you know, you hear that, you know, your dad's got cancer and he has less than 2 years to live. And when I read what she wrote, you know, part of it broke my heart. And because, like, I totally missed her perspective. Like, I was focused on me, and I was focused on me getting better, and I was focused on me getting treatment, and I was focused on me taking care of my family and all that. And like, I totally missed her perspective. So Ram, would you share a little bit about what your perspective was as you walked through that?
On that day, I got angry. The night before, excuse me, I had been home alone. Mom had been up at the hospital. And I just remember, I was putting clothes away. And I stopped. And I just started to cry. And I was talking to God. And I was listing out to Him all the reasons why. At 16, I wasn't ready for you to be gone. One of the main things that I remembered was, I said, look, He takes me out, He opens the hood of the car and points at 15 different things and explains to me what they do. And that one day when I have a car and it makes this noise, this is what's wrong with it. And I didn't pay attention. I was 15, 16. And my thought was, well, when the day comes that I'm on the side of the road, because my car's not working, you know, it's making a weird noise or there's smoke or something coming from the hood, I'm not going to open up the hood myself. I'm going to call my dad and he's going to come and fix it. So I'm not going to pay attention to this right now. And I had, those were the kind of things that I was thinking about. And then the next day, he had 2 years left. And then at that point, it was okay. Now he's going to miss college. He's going to miss me moving out. He's going to miss me getting married, my family. So I just got very, very mad at everything that I had lost in the span of 10 minutes in that conversation that I had with Mom about everything.
Yeah. I think one of the most powerful things, and thank you for sharing that. I think one of the most powerful things in the chapter that Rand wrote, she talks about how she would come to church. She would come to church, she'd come to places, and people would always ask, how's your dad doing? They would ask, how's your mom doing? And then what?
Then it was, well, tell them I'm thinking of them. Tell them I'm praying for them.
Yeah. And so where did that leave you?
I was still angry. Because I can understand that I'm not the one who has cancer. I'm not going through chemo. I'm not mom who's all of a sudden kind of taking on every single role in the family. I was the 16-year-old who was just at home and, you know, still there.
Yeah, but it was almost like you were not there. That's kind of what it communicated.
Yeah.
And so like that perspective of what do you do with that? I mean, you know, and I'm not asking you to answer that, right? I'm just saying that to everybody out there who's listening. You know, what do you do with that? You're in this disruption. And again, when I talk about disruptions, I'm not talking about a diagnosis of some kind, because life's disruptions come in so many different forms and shapes and sizes. And it may be that you go to work one day and everything is great and you think your job is great. And as soon as you get there, they call you into the office and they say, hey, thank you for your service. We don't need you anymore. And that's a disruption. It's a disruption for you. It's a disruption for people in your family. It's a disruption for, you know, for all the different people in your orbit. And everybody has a different perspective on it. They have a different, it impacts them differently emotionally. You know, it may be, you know, maybe a car accident. And maybe it's just a fender bender, right? That in the grand scheme of things, yeah, it's going to take a few weeks, but we're going to get it fixed and it's going to get taken care of. But if there's three people in the car, there's three different perspectives of what happened. There's, you know, the person who's driving, the person who's sitting in the passenger seat, the person who's in the back, and every single one of those perspectives, you go through the same experience, but you experience it differently. And so often we assume that, well, this has been my experience. This is what I felt. So everybody must be feeling the same way. And I don't believe that to be true. And the better we can be at understanding the different perspectives and listening to the other voices, the better we will be, the better we'll be as a people. Nick, you look like you have something you want to say or ask.
A lot of things I'd like to say. I'm not sure. Maybe none of them are really important, but I just thank you for both of you for coming, and all three of you, and sharing your perspectives. There's so many lessons here that one could learn. And certainly the idea that different people have different perspectives on every issue, that you can apply that to almost everything we deal with in life. I'm gonna bring it back to me, okay?
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm sitting here thinking about. So I'm 80 years old. My wife is 10 years younger than I am. And my kids and grandchildren are all much younger. I'm sitting here thinking on a bell curve. I might have 10 years, but I don't. Probably I might have one, and someplace maybe 5 years is what I'm looking at. And I've been thinking about this for a while, and I've only been thinking about myself. I've only been thinking about, well, what am I going to do, and what's going to happen to me, and where am I going to be? And often my kids and my wife have been really angry with me, and I was never sure why, okay? But they're not stupid. They know where I am, okay? And they're angry with me because I'm not thinking about them. Mm. And so this is very moving for me. And I hope I can take something away positive.
Yeah, thank you, Nick. And I think that's like the challenge, right? I think the challenge is to be able to sit there and say, you know, that, because we are at the core of who we are self-focused beings, right? I say self-focused to be a little bit gentler, right? You know, that we're not, you know, I don't like to say we're self-centered beings, but we are self-focused. And we see the world through our own eyes and through our own experience. And it is what kind of colors the way that we see everything. And if we can, you know, if we could do better at seeing other people's experience, then we would help those around us who we love and we care, you know, that we care for. I know that when I read Rand's chapter, I just, in that, the book Caring Conversations, the first thought that came to my mind is, man, wish I had read this, you know, the day I was diagnosed. I wish I had read this, you know, a week after I was diagnosed, because I could have helped her navigate a terrible season, an ongoing season, honestly, much better in a much healthier way.
I think one of the perspectives that challenges me is that I have two perspectives even for myself, because I have the perspective, and this kind of goes along with your situation, Nick, where I want to live the most I can with you, and I want to prolong your life as long as I can, and I want to make the most of our home environment so it's best for your current situation. But then I also have to plan for the worst scenario, where if you're not here anymore, you know, how am I going to live then? And sometimes they're going against each other. And it's always awkward to have a conversation with you that I have to start. And my phrase is always, if something would happen to you one day, then how would I, and have that conversation. And I don't like to have it, because it sounds like it's like a self, you know, like I want that to happen and I don't want it to happen. But, you know, so sometimes even in my brain, there's more than one perspective having to take place at one time, and makes my brain kind of crowded.
Yeah. I'm sure my wife is going through that same thing.
Right, because you don't want to talk about it, because you don't want to make it happen, but then you've got to face it, you know, as well. You know, this kind of silly story is when I, you know, every now and then I'll tell Dan, well, I cannot live in this house alone. And then, you know, he'll say, well, why not? And it was because I can't, our driveway's so steep, I can't push the full trash can down to the end of the drive. And so that was it. We were going to have to sell the house. And so Dan came up with a solution that is very easy, and now I can do it. But there's sometimes I'm thinking of things like that. And again, it's awkward to have that conversation, because it's just awkward.
Rand, you have anything else you're thinking about?
Just on perspectives. My brother comes to mind. He was already out of the house whenever Dad got diagnosed. He was probably about like 20, I think.
21.
And I remember the day that Dad got diagnosed, I think Mom had told him before me. And after she told me, I sent him a text and I said, did Mom tell you? And he said, yes. And I don't remember how it came up, but one of his responses was, well, 2 years is pretty good. And I remember at that point, I wanted to throw my phone against the wall, because I'm sitting there saying, no, Joseph, this is not good. 2 years gets me to 18. It gets you to 22. This is not good. But that's Joseph's perspective. That was how he saw it, was, okay, you know what? Yeah, 2 years is good. I'm sitting there looking at it and, well, no, last night I told God that, you know, that wasn't enough. 2 years isn't enough. No, you know, 10 years isn't going to even be enough. And so Joseph's perspective was, you know, instead of 6 months, we get 2 years, and 2 years is pretty good. So even that, we're both siblings, we're both going to lose a father. But to him, 2 years was good. So seeing his perspective in that, and it took me a while to understand it, but.
I've got a question for you, Dan. You said I could ask any question I wanted. So for the listeners who didn't pick up on the date when you were diagnosed, you've been going strong for 7 years, right? And I don't know how you keep going.
I've been going for 7 years. Strong is a relative term. Like I keep doing, and I think so there was a moment for me where I was frozen. That diagnosis froze me. and I came into my office one day, and I closed my door, which I don't normally do. I didn't normally do. I left my door open for people to come in and to visit and to talk. And I closed my office door, and I prepared my funeral. And I laid it out, and I got in touch with all the people that I wanted to speak at it. I talked to the people who were going to play the music at it. And I got the whole thing all set. And once that was all set, I went and met with Matt Grieco and said, here's the funeral and everything's all set. And I put it in a file drawer, and I made the conscious decision at that point that whatever time God had left for me, I was going to live. Whether that be 6 months, whether that be a year and a half, whether that be 2 years, whether that be 7 years, whether that be 20 years, I don't know. I can't answer that. But there was something about writing that funeral and putting it together for me that allowed me to say, this part is done. And now I'm going to make the most out of whatever time the Spirit allows me to have left here on this earth. And that's what I've done. And, you know, sometimes it feels kind of foolish. Like, you know, we're starting a podcast. Like, we're on episode like 15 of a podcast. You know, who starts a podcast when they tell you you're going to live two years and you're 7 years in? I mean, it kind of feels foolish on some levels, right? But then on another level, it's like, no, you know what? Whatever. This is the time. And we're going to make the most of it. And we're going to share. And we're going to try to help other people. And that's just kind of the way it's been. It hasn't always been easy. There's been times when treatment gets in the way and disrupts things, and causes all kinds of problems. But I guess I've just kind of, it's become my new normal. And the challenge for me, I guess the night I was diagnosed, I was laying in the hospital bed. This is another piece of it for me. I was really wrestling with my own mortality. I was wrestling with my perspective of everything. And I had a spiritual director years ago who would always ask the question, where do you see the Spirit of God in this? And as I was laying there, listening to music, not able to sleep, wrestling with everything that we had just heard and been through, that question popped in my mind. You know, where's the Spirit of God in this? And my immediate gut reanswer was, I was angry. Like, Spirit of God in this? Spirit of God in the midst of this cancer, telling me I'm going to live 2 years? Spirit of God is nowhere in this. And the longer I laid there, and the more I asked the question, the more I was able to see little glimpses, little glimmers of, yeah, you know what? Yeah, there is the Spirit of God in this. Here's this conversation. Here's that conversation. Here's where, even in the midst of the darkest moments, the Spirit of God is working and moving and weaving through And for the past 7 years, that's been going to make the most of whatever the time is. And I'm looking for the Spirit of God to be alive and well and at work in my life and in my world. And yeah, that's kind of how we're moving.
Well, whenever I tell people your story, I always say that it's your strong faith that has gotten you through it. Mm. Could you say a little more about that?
I think it is the, well, people will ask me at different times, we'll talk about healing in different kind of ways. I went to a church one time, they wanted to pray for my healing. And like, this is the first time I articulated this out loud, which was very healthy for me. And as they were praying over me for healing, they stopped at one point and somebody asked me, they said, do you believe that God could heal you? And I responded and I said, well, I do, but I believe I'm already healed. So I don't, for me, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when and how. And, you know, God could choose to remove this cancer from my body tomorrow. You know, I could go in for scans tomorrow and the doctors could look and be amazed and go, I don't know what happened, but the cancer is no longer there. I could be healed from the different therapies and stuff that they're doing on my body. When one of my initial conversations with my oncologist, who I just absolutely adore, he said, your job is to stay alive long enough so that we come up with new treatments that's going to cure your cancer. And that may be the way that God chooses to heal me. Or God may choose to heal me when he calls me home. And so either way, I'm healed. And it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, and it's a matter of how. And so that's kind of how I move through the world. It's you know, I'm healed. I'm waiting for it. I'm confident that it's going to happen one way or the other. And I'm confident that the Spirit of God is alive and well and at work in our world and in my life. And I want to live each moment, whatever it is. I want to live it. And I want to experience it. And that's what's driving me right now. So
thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for asking. Nikki or Nancy, you wanted to say something?
Well, I think perspective wise, you were talking about planning your funeral and how freeing that was. And I could tell on your face, that was just a very freeing thing. And you felt great about it. And you were going in to meet with Matt, with me, and you were feeling all great. I literally had a migraine.
Yeah.
So a lot of the things that have been great for you and freeing for you, I have literally had physical migraines and other physical ailments just trying to do the same thing.
Yeah. Well, thank you for walking so well with me through it.
Migraines and all.
Migraines and all. Because I couldn't have done it without either of the two of you. So, but you've walked well. And so just everybody who's listening, perspectives, you know, we all have one. And chances are that no matter what it is that you're experiencing right now in your life, whatever the disruption is that's taking over, that seems overwhelming. And as you look at it, and as you experience it, chances are that some of the people who are closest to you, some of those people who are helping you navigate that disruption in your life, they probably have a different perspective, slightly different perspective, maybe a radically different perspective of what's taking place and what's going on. And it would do us well just to understand that, to remember that, and to just show each other grace. Because as difficult as a situation may be for you to navigate, it's equally as difficult for those who are walking alongside you. So Ray and Nancy, thank you for being here. Nick, thank you for being here and asking questions and listening and being a part of this. Until next time, may you just be abundantly aware of the Spirit of God, alive and well, and at work in your world.
Amen.